Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on the nature of consciousness and life continuum as revealed through near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences. Topics that we cover include what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature a stellar roster of special guests for both experiencers and researchers in the realm of NDEs and related topics. For more information about the work that we do, the services that we provide, and the support, please visit our website, towardthelight.org, and also our media website, towardthelight.info. This week I am very pleased to have actually two people who are the authors of a brilliant book entitled Take Me to Truth. Welcome to Toward the Light, Mr. Tomas Vieira and Nick Sanchez. Welcome to both of you to Toward the Light. Hello.
Hi, Juliet.
Hey, Juliet. How are you going?
Oh, very well, thank you. And it's so lovely to have you both on Toward the Light this week. And what I would like to do is, I know that both of you worked on this tremendous book together, but obviously there were special experiences that you had that catapulted you onto the path of the research that resulted in your book. So maybe we could start with one of you telling us, or the listeners, about experiences that you've had. And I believe, did one or both of you have a near-death experience or a near-death-like experience?
Yeah. Well, the process of undoing the ego is a death-like experience, and we'll go into that later. But the beginning really was back in 1984 when we first met. Both of us had by then already experienced relationships where love could seem to turn to hate. Both of us, as it turned out, in our early childhood, had a friendship with Jesus, not the guy on the cross, but a big brother, somebody who was just there, a mentor, somebody who listened unconditionally. It was just a friend. And of course, with puberty and with teenagehood, all that went by the by, and in we both welcomed sex, drugs, and rock and roll, right? But so by 84, we had already had these experiences that were counter to what we believed in. And what we believed in was that love was real, love is eternal, who we are is spirit, and yet at the level of form in these bodies, we were experiencing these dysfunctional lives.
So when you were in 1984, were you in your 20s, or I don't know how old you were?
Yeah, in our 20s then.
Okay.
And this one night in our courtship, you might say, we were lying on the beach in the place called Cairns, which is in Queensland in Australia on the Great Barrier Reef, and lying on the beach, I guess you could say, pronouncing our love for each other. And a strange thing happened because we made a vow that night to each other. It turned out to be a vow to each other, which was that no matter what or no matter whom should seem to come between us, let us never abandon each other. And at that point, the most beautiful pink light appeared on Nook's face, just on her face. And unbeknownst to me, the same light was shining on my face. And needless to say, we were both speechless for a little while, and then we came to and said, well, what was that? And we had no idea what that was and what it was about, and so we carried on. Well, in 1988, then, in 1986, actually, we got married, but here we are. By 1990, our relationship was dysfunctional once again. Love was once again seeming to be turning to hate. And it was at that point, with both of us on our knees, desperate to find another way, desperate to hold on to the deeper love that we knew we shared for each other, that we came across a book called A Course in Miracles, which is a channeled writing, right? And it was from that we began the journey of what was, to be the undoing of the ego and the dying to the self that we thought we were.
Now, if you don't mind backing up a little bit, what sort of things could actually cause people who purportedly love each other to suddenly feel like they're hating each other? That's quite a polarity we're talking about here.
Yes, isn't it? Well, what it is that before we undo the ego, there is the ego is like a default program. From the moment we open our eyes, we are starting to download all this stuff that's uninvestigated, and it's about a mistaken sense of self. It's a belief that we are our body, our senses, etc. Underneath that is a belief that we're finite, a belief in deprivation, a belief in lack, which drives us to get. And so for most people coming into a relationship, whether they're conscious or not, they might pronounce their love for each other, but underneath, until it's investigated, the ego is driving a program that says, "What you are here to meet my needs." And when those needs aren't met, love seems to turn to hate.
That's very interesting, too. Now, I will say that, especially as infants and small children, and it varies from individual to individual, but some people are very much in touch still with their soul self, which is more generated and moved by love, because that's where the knowing comes from. And then unfortunately, as you said, the more time one spends in the physical realm, there are these downloads, as you so rightfully say, or what I call brainwashing and conditioning, mind control, where people are actually taught to deny the soul self, the true self, and only acknowledge the ego and the five sensory experience of quote-unquote reality as real, and nothing could be further from the truth. So I would say it does vary from individual to individual, depending on how evolved the soul is. But that's a really good point you're making. And I will also venture to say with it is, when one is really in a place of love, then that can't turn to hate.
No, it can't. Nobody can love and have that love turn to hate. And this is shocking for me to realize many years ago, was that if love seemed to turn to hate, then it really wasn't love, real
love. There you
love, go. All right?
Exactly.
And I think if we give a little bit of a background on the ego, it might help the listeners to identify it. The ego basically is a mistaken identity. It is the false self. But it's the false self we really believe we are until such time as our dream or our life crashes. And that's when we reach out and go, okay, I've tried everything else within the mistaken identity and it doesn't work. So now I'm going to have a look at what this mistaken identity is. And when we look at it, we realize that basically it's a thought that's apart from the divine. It's
yes.
actually apart from the divine. And who we think we are has a mantra. The ego has a mantra, and the mantra is seek and do not find. Now this is highly unconscious until we call it up, until we start to investigate our hidden beliefs on love or any other thing within this life. And because the ego is a thought that's apart from God, it comes from the opposite to what God is. God is love, the divine is love, with no opposite. But the ego, our mistaken identity, it comes from fear, and
yes.
fear only.
Yes.
So not just 99% of all of our desires and our actions and our beliefs and values from the ego are from fear, but 100% are from fear. And we don't really realize this until we undo the ego, which a lot of the mystics in the past have called the ego death, which is very dramatic.
Mm.
But the truth is that nothing really dies. The only thing that dies is is all of our dysfunction and all of our suffering in this life. And I don't know about you, Juliet, but I'm happy to release all of my suffering.
Oh, okay? Goodness me, yes.
Because who we really are is the divine. This is something that Tomas and I have learned over the last 18 years of taking this journey literally and living it, is as we undo this mistaken identity, what we find is that we actually are this divine will, and that the divine will wants only happiness and joy, love and peace for us. And as we undo this false will, the ego, we find more and more that we are living intuition and synchronicity day to day, not just day to day, hour to hour, minute to minute, second to second. So it is sort of dying to the false self. That's what the process is.
So what was it that actually got you into this work? Obviously something started to turn sour in your relationship. Was it as a result of that, or what happened that got you into this work and this process of discovery and writing the book?
The key for me was that I really felt I'd met my soulmate when I met Tomas in 1984. When we made that vow on the beach that night and we saw that pink light, we knew it was divine.
Mm.
We couldn't explain it, and we still can't really explain it, not in this dimension, but we knew it was divine. And I knew that I would find love with this other soul called Tomas, yeah? I also knew in that moment with the pink light that the love that I knew was not real love. And the love that most of us know on this planet is not real love, okay? I knew all that. It was just downloaded in an instant. It was a 360-degree revelation. So I knew that. So when we came to 1988-1990 and our relationship was falling apart, that was when I fell to my knees and asked the divine, please, I need to know what it is that's going to save this, because I've been running it my own way through my own sense of self and it doesn't work, and neither did it work for Tomas. And so that was when A Course in Miracles was literally given to us. And in The Course in Miracles, what it says there is that we can't learn what love is through the thought system, which is the ego or the false sense of self that we think we are. We cannot learn what love is through that self. What is required, and A Course in Miracles delivers this process, what is required is unlearning the blocks that we have to the awareness of the love we are and the love we have, which is the awareness of the presence of love within our lives. And that's what we did.
And we should say, you know, when we use that word love, I mean, what we're saying is we are love. Another way of saying that, love is spirit. Who we are is spirit. We are not these bodies.
And that becomes so apparent for all of us who are near-death experiences, because through my multiple near-death states, I had absolutely no sense of fear, no sense of being alone or being lost, and
beautiful.
All I could feel or experience was unconditional love. And it's always so awkward to use these words now, because unfortunately they've been so watered down and
yeah.
been turned into cliches. And the truth is that all of this stuff is really ineffable, but once somebody has been through this experience, one knows it to the core of one's being.
Yes, yes. And I think what you raise is a good point, right, which is that experience, the word experience that you use there.
Mm.
You can grab whatever you want to grab out there, and there's millions of books and publications and religions and whatever to follow. But all of that reading is just going to make you a scholar.
Exactly.
It's about the experience. And for those that might be listening that maybe haven't had that near-death experience, there is another way to also experience it, but you must surrender.
Yes.
And that's the key word there. You cannot know it from your head and still want to maintain control of the vessel of this form of the body that we have and think that we're in control and we're going to drive it. Unless we're prepared to take both hands off the wheel, we can never experience the fact that we are spirit, not bodies.
And this is such a relevant thing to be talking about right now, because with everything that's going on in this plane, it's kind of frightening. And at the same time, it's providing a tremendous opportunity for people to ultimately turn to love and allow themselves to flow. That's a big word that's on my mind right now, is to flow, because the ego is always trying to manipulate and be in control, but the fact is we're not in control.
Yes, and you're right. I mean, right now, it would appear that in a global sense, the heat's being turned up. I say, Terrific, turn it up even higher.
Yes, yes.
Because it needs, for many of us, you know, it was like with Nook and I, the love was so deep and great, but the heat needed to be turned up on our dysfunction before we would let go of the steering wheel.
Exactly. And I was thinking about this just last night. You know, with many a show, many of people that I've spoken with, we've all talked about the fact that love does prevail. That's why you see it at the bottom of every email that I send out, and that's what I say on the show, because I know from experience that, you know, number one, I wouldn't even be sitting here right now if that were not the case. Sometimes in order to really understand something that's true, we've got to experience the opposite. So, and all of this negativity really is just going to burn itself out, because there is the unawareness, the unconsciousness of the truth, of divine love.
Exactly. I mean, this is just an illusion that we're experiencing now. As in a dream, it seems real. Now the thing is, should we be spending our time trying to fix the dream, or should we simply wake up?
I think you've got a good one there. Yes, indeed.
Right? And we all run around trying to fix this dream, which is all external to self, when the real journey is to go within.
Absolutely.
To find that we are spirit. And so, what does that mean? Well, that means that it's invulnerable. That means it's perfection. It is all love. It is all awareness. It's indestructible. So if that's the case, what is there to fix then?
And indeed, what is there to fear? And, you know, when I think about this, so many of us have been through a death experience, but indeed that's not required to be in touch with who you really are, but it certainly helps, because then one realizes, oh my goodness, there's the body over there, but here I am, still conscious, still alive, still real, still me.
And more than that, feeling fantastic, right?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And you know what else was really wonderful about my experiences, and I'm sure that you've tapped upon this in your book too, is that I felt very detached. There was not that sense of ego, but I was so at peace, and so, not just merely trusting, but knowing that everything is evolving exactly the way it should, and that I was going to be all right no matter what. But this is true for absolutely everyone. So how do we convey this? You know, because the ego does, it just clings to, oh, I've got to be in control. And yet, it doesn't need to be in control. The light is in control.
Well, what we found on our journey is there's only one of us. There appears to be many, many, many of us. But when we relinquish the control that you're talking about there, we find that we really are one.
Yes.
And therefore there is no fear when we know we're one. And that's a huge thing. I'm wondering if you got a chance, Juliet, to ever see a recent, I think it was a podcast that came out, and it was about a neuroscientist, and her name, if I can recall, was Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor.
I saw that. The thing that, and she was an NDE as well. What was a little bit odd to me about her presentation was she kept focusing on the brain rather than on consciousness that transmits through the brain.
Yes.
And I do make that distinction that consciousness does not come from the brain
any more
than the broadcast comes from the radio.
Mm-mm.
The broadcast comes through the radio, through the brain, but not from it.
Exactly. That's a really, really good point. However, for a lot of people, alongside of what you're saying there, for a lot of people, that was a real eye-opener and a heart-opener. Because this lady actually had a stroke and was able to contact that one self, whether she knew it or not.
Exactly.
She was reporting back to us that, wow, it is just heaven to be in that state, in a state of oneness, yeah?
Oh, it's so wonderful. And another thing, too, is that I have had a ton of spiritually transformative experiences which are comparable in essence to the near-death state, again, feeling that total sense of one, being one with all, and you feel really huge when you're in that state. And I'm certainly not talking about in an egotistical way, but because of being one with all, you feel so large that nothing can harm you in any way. You feel the profound sense of peace and of connectedness, of knowing. And it's something that it can be really easily attained, experienced, what have you. Go ahead.
And it's funny, too, because if you ask most people whether they'd like to experience this or awakening, whatever you would like to call it, they say that they're terrified or very fearful of it because they have a great fear that they're going to be, that they're going to be constricted, restricted, that they're going to be bored, that they're going to
lose their identity,
and onwards, right? And yet, I'm sort of hearing you say that it's nothing like that at all.
Oh, not in the least. And in fact, I've spoken with a few people who said those very things, and I sort of caught my head and I wonder, how do you come to that? You know, how can you come to that conclusion? And again, I think so much of it is about the ego losing its sense of being in control. But oh boy, that's what absolutely needs to happen. And well, to be honest, I've never met a bored NDE yet. I really haven't. It is just the most glorious thing. And, you know, that's part of the good news, too.
So can I ask you a question, Juliet?
Mm.
What do you lose? Is
you
there anything valuable
fear.
That is lost?
The only thing that's lost is the fear.
Yes, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go. That's it.
And I don't mind losing that at all. Thank you very much. You know, it is just really a wonderful state to be in. So let's talk about maybe some of the steps that you have come up with. It's sort of like giving a child a hug and saying it's all right.
Yes.
You need fear nothing and. So what are some of the steps that we can offer our listeners?
And I guess that's what Take Me to Truth is about. Mm-hmm. I should mention the title. We had a bunch of titles that we chose. And then Nook was awoken at 4 in the morning with a loud booming voice telling her, and the title is Take Me to Truth.
Excellent.
Not Take Me to the Truth, which is relative. Right, but it was about take me to truth, and what was interesting about it was take me as in the false identity, the illusion of who I think I am, to the truth. But what we try to do in this life, of course, is take the truth to the illusion.
Yeah.
And therein lies the pain that comes from it.
That's right. If we equate the word truth with light or love, right? What we try and do is we try and bring light or love into our seeming nightmare here. It doesn't work like that, right? We actually have to undo the sense of self, the mistaken sense of self, and then we find we are light. We don't have to bring any light to us. We actually are part of the light. Yeah.
And something I wanted to say, too, when you were describing seeing each other's luminous face, I saw that very light whilst on the other side. And, you know, a lot of NDEs will talk about light, and for some of them, their experience is that the light is localized, but for some of us, there was no certain direction or location of the light. It was absolutely everywhere. It was everywhere, and everything that I saw was luminous. And I saw this, what I would describe, because I'm really into color, I love color, I used to be quite an active artist, painter, all of that stuff. It's almost like a peachy color. It was very warm and very soothing, and you just looking at it, you could feel the love permeating your entire being. And so I would venture to say that that's what you were seeing. You were seeing each other in the truth of who you really are.
Exactly.
In that moment.
Exactly. Except the body doesn't have to die.
No, it doesn't.
To be able to see it, which is a great thing.
Can say it's really about raising our vibrational frequency.
Yes. Yes. And we the way that we do that is through a process of unlearning, really, unlearning who we think we are. There have been a few accounts, and they're quite rare, of people spontaneously waking up, right? But they are quite rare. Most of us here on this planet have to go through stages, and they are stages, and they do take time while we're in time, which is an illusion, but while we're here and believing it's real, these stages take time. And we spent a good proportion of the book, Take Me to Truth, on explaining how one would go through those stages in a practical process and what you might expect while you're going through these stages. The last one, which is stage six, is the stage that you were talking about before, which is where you're actually lucid dreaming, because this life is a dream,
yes,
but
it is.
You're awake within the dream. And then everything and everybody is luminous, is alive, and they're pulsating with light. They're pulsating with love. And that's the stage six experience. A Course in Miracles calls it a happy dream. That's the happy dream, where we don't have to have the body die to reach into this, living this state of love, okay, that has no opposite. But most of us have to start at stage one. And stage one is the undoing. And it's usually precipitated by a deep disillusionment, which is caused by some type of a crisis, you know, like a relationship breakup, maybe a death, a career loss, an identity crisis, etc. Or it could be brought upon by a near-death experience too. We've heard that it's been brought on by that, where you come out of that and go, oh, my God, I've seen what is true, and coming back to the body here, we go, I cannot live a lie anymore, right? And so we begin our process of undoing or unlearning who we think we are, what the world is, and what our true purpose in this life is. We unlearn all of that, and so that's what stage one is. And it's like a collision of two belief systems. One is the belief system of the world that we've been raised on, and all of our past conditioning, our stories, etc. And the new belief system, once we've touched the face of God, if we've had a near-death experience, or for most of us who haven't had a near-death experience, we've just got to have the faith that there is the divine out there, and the divine wants for us only the best. Stage two is where we get the opportunity to sort out our values and beliefs. They're all raised to be sorted out, and we begin to really see what doesn't work anymore. Okay, we practice prioritizing peace in our lives. We're forgiving people. We want very much to be happy rather than to be right at this stage. Okay,
that's a good point.
Up until that stage, Most of our life, we've learned to be right. We want to be right rather than be happy. Yeah. And then we go to the third stage, which is called relinquishment. This is where we learn to relinquish what doesn't work for us anymore. All our beliefs and values that have held us back in the past, and we're starting to work out really what is valuable here. But we're still afraid. We fear sacrifice, right? Now, there is no sacrifice, and we don't really learn this till we get to stage 4 and 5. There is nothing really in this process of awakening to who we really are that can ask any sacrifice. What we learn later on in the journey is the only thing we sacrifice was suffering.
And fear, as you rightly recognized already.
Okay. But until we get to this stage, we really, with our own ego value system, we really don't know what is valuable. We don't know what's causing a sacrifice. Yeah? So it's at this stage that we begin to accept that all change is helpful, that everything that the divine brings to us has great value, even if it might be temporarily uncomfortable. Then we go to stage 4, which is called a period of rest, and it's in this stage where we really see our whole way out. We have great peace, great insight, and it could be mistaken for premature enlightenment at this stage. The fifth stage is unsettling. I don't like that term at all, but it is unsettling. It's sort of a reality check. It's just a check to make sure that we don't get that the ego doesn't think that it's enlightened, because a lot of teachers, spiritual teachers, have reached the stage 4 experience and really thought that it was them that was enlightened. well, if you say I am enlightened, then who is enlightened? It's only the ego, right?
Yes.
So, and the ego can, it loves to do a spiritual enlightenment trip. It can spend 10, 20, 30 years there. The problem is that it can also lead other people astray while it's there and cause a lot of pain. So stage 5 is unsettling. It's a reality check. It sort of takes us through some of the previous values that we had earlier in stage 1, 2, and 3. And allows us to revisit some of those, but without the emotional impact that we had before. Yeah.
It allows us to be the observer, to remember that we are not this body. It gives us those experiences again, except this time we have the memory of saying, hang on a second, I'm not a body. I'm part of the divine. As such, I can tap into that at any time. I can call in the love and the light of who I am to review this situation, and from that standpoint, decide on what needs to happen next. And so then we learn, wow, the guidance is within. I don't need anybody outside telling me what to do. I have it within. And in fact, I'm a co-creator of this life.
Absolutely. And I think it would be very good if people could remember we are a soul who's got a body rather than the other way around.
Yes.
The body is just, it's like a piece of clothing. When we're done with it, we discard the clothing, or as David Icke so rightly puts it, a body computer. The computer still needs an operator to operate it.
Yes.
So it's just a tool, it's a vessel, but it is not who we are. And it's a piece of work getting people to understand that.
I liked what David said there, because in our workshops that we run around the country, what we talk about is that the ego is just a default system. And if you don't question it and you just turn it on and think it works without questioning, you think that that is the life. But it's not.
Yes. But the interesting thing, too, what I had said earlier, is that when the soul first comes into this plane, it is still remembering who it really is, and that's why I think it's important to listen to children and also watch babies and what they're observing, because they're still basically living interdimensionally, and they're not caught up with or identifying with the physical plane. But more and more people are saying, all right, well, that's just a dream, that's make-believe, that's not real. Get to reality, and their interpretation of reality is this five-sensory world, and nothing could be further from the truth.
Yeah, I mean, the cover of our book actually features our daughter, Ricky. She's on the cover of the book, and And there's a reason for that. I mean, as it wasn't planned, it just happened that she had a great photograph of herself, and we put it on the book. But it's about emerging into that light that we are. But more than that, for Nook and I, it was a statement about the fact that our children are our greatest teachers.
Oh, aren't they ever?
Right? Spirit is spirit. And one of the things that we learned in The Undoing is that just because I might be taller than you and older than you, has no relevance in terms of the teaching capacity, because we are both spirit. And in fact, as you rightly said, in many cases, the young ones still haven't been totally indoctrinated yet with the ego belief. And so it's incumbent on us to actually have an awareness of that and ask our kids for the help, because they can be our greatest teachers.
Oh, and it's brilliant. I mean, the children that have been born in more recent years are just absolutely brilliant, and they're very psychic. They're very in touch with the multi-dimensional reality. It's quite amazing what we've observed with these children. In fact, a friend of mine and I were just talking about give any gadget to a child and they know how to, they spin circles around us trying, you know, working computers and machinery and gadgets and all of that kind of stuff. It's quite brilliant what they can do. But I wanted to ask you, when you were working on this book, and I know that you've studied A Course in Miracles, and I will say honestly, some things about The Course in Miracles I resonate with and some things I do not. But obviously, I would sense that you had some experiences that enabled you to take this a step further and to write this book. Am I correct in that assumption?
Well, what we found was that The Course in Miracles is absolutely consistent. Where we all get caught up, whether it's The Course in Miracles or anything else, right, is the delineation between form and content.
Yeah.
So if we can get out of our head with wanting to fight about form, i.e., for example, we could argue for hours about, let's use the word awareness, or let's use the word spirit, or let's use the word God, or Buddha, or whatever, right? Those are all words of form. But if we go to content, what is the content? The content is absolutely consistent in what we've experienced, which is that underneath who we think we are indeed one. Underneath who we think we indeed are love. Underneath who we think we indeed have divine guidance 24/7. And so I guess Take Me to Truth is really a bit like, a couple of explorers. That's how Nook and I see ourselves. Taking a scholarly publication, believing in it 100%, and then going out and experiencing it. And in so doing, making every conceivable mistake you could, by the way. And that's how we learned about delineating form and content. And so Take Me to Truth is really like coming back to shore, coming back to the place where we left, and being able to report back to people that, hey, guess what? The water's warm. You can jump in. You know, we're happy to report back that you lose nothing on the journey to finding yourself. There is no sacrifice. Because deep within, as we've talked about, there's some part that says, you know, if I truly gave up this life and my addiction and my value base on this house and security and money and whatever and even health, if I truly did that, poof, I'm going to suddenly find myself standing in a loincloth with a begging bowl.
Yes.
And that's just bullshit.
In fact, I'm thinking of a young lady I know. Well, but to me, she's young. She's in her 30s and a divorcee, and she's living in the house that she and her ex-husband once occupied, and she's still in that house, and she's insisting she doesn't want to rent. She's got to own a house because that will give her, quote, security, and She's got all these clothes and all of these shoes and all of these possessions
yes.
and all of this furniture. And she thinks that if she owns all of this stuff, she's going to be, quote, secure. And it just made me dizzy.
Yes.
Just thinking about what she was saying. And yet, when I would
you know, venture to try to share something with her. She can't rock it. She can't even fathom what
yes.
I'm talking about, because she's, you know, she's just being brainwashed into this American
yep.
dream.
That's a perfect example of the ego at work with seek and do not find, right?
Mm.
Go and acquire, go and have, go and become, try to get, and in all of that activity you will find safety. And we all know that all that amounts to is that at 3 o'clock in the morning you will still wake up with sweaty palms and wondering that impending sense of doom dream.
Yeah.
And that's only because the ego's been driving it through the daytime experience at the conscious level, that we are in fear, that we are lack, that we are alone and separate and separated,
yeah.
when in truth we are not.
And you know, they're doing so much of that, and I am just so proud to say, and I don't mind saying this over and over again, I do not own or watch television.
Yay! We don't have one either.
Oh, goodness me, talk about the worst brainwashing machine on the planet. And again, this young girl is always watching the telly when she's not out working somewhere. And then just being so, talk about being downloaded with all of this false stuff. So, you know, the shadow people, the powers that be, are really pushing all of this fear-based lies. Oh, I've got to have more money. I've got to have more petrol. I've got to have more food. Oh, oh, oh. And they just get so lost, and then they can't even fathom who they really are. They believe what's written on a piece of paper. Oh, that's me. No,
yes.
It's not.
In our workshops, we do that. We work with people to look at a couple of major themes. One is about the oneness and how, in fact, we project all that we see. So, you know, a bit like, you know, with the quantum physics, the reality is that, you know, it takes on the particles and the molecules actually change depending on the perceiver. So
yes.
It demonstrates clearly that we are not what we see, and that we give all the meaning that anything that we see has to it. So that's one thing that we do. And the second thing we do is work with people on this mistaken sense of identity, and we demonstrate for them that, for example, imagine that you're standing in an empty field, absolute vastness, for as far as the eye can see. That's who you are, that's what you own, so to speak, to use the jargon of this world.
Mm.
And yet what we're taught to do is, in the name of free will, and that's the funniest part, is, for example, to go down to the lumber yard and buy a bunch of stakes, come back to that open vast field and hammer in a bunch of stakes right around just where we stand. And then we proudly put our hands on our hips and say, this is me and I am free.
Oh dear. Well, nothing could be further from the truth. It feels like George Orwell saying war is peace, you know?
Yeah. Don't you love that stuff? Like peace protesting. I love that.
Oh,
peace
God.
Protesting. 36 were arrested the other day. What does that mean? What's that about?
Well, that's why I like what David Icke said. He said, you don't fight for peace, you peace for peace. Hello. You know, bless him. Because that's the truth. And in fact, I won't get involved in any sort of protest, because my way of thinking is that we need to put energy into the solution, not fighting what we are at odds with.
Well, the funny thing is that the minute we identify that we're at odds with anything, we have separated.
Exactly.
And so how, it's impossible then to get a sense of peace. And it's impossible to contribute to peace in this time or this age or this world, because the whole time we're actually reaffirming that we are separate and alone and isolated. So the only thing to do is to work on self within, to go within, and to practice forgiveness. We talk a great deal about forgiveness, and A Course in Miracles is based on forgiveness, because it's the forgiveness that we are separate. It's the forgiveness of this illusion that we've made up, and that we then need to, having made this up, defend or attack. Both are actions that continue the separation. So it's actually looking out onto the world, and as you said, not participating in it. Now, whether we like the, you know, all the great teachers, they'll talk about the fact that it's about, yes, okay, we're here in this world, be in this world, but don't be of it.
Exactly.
Don't attach yourself to anything that's here, because none of this is real.
When I was on the other side, and this is so wonderful, because through these experiences I can absolutely validate everything you're saying. One thing is that when I was told that I had to return to this place to share the message that life is eternal, I was also reminded, remember, what was there is only an illusion. And just as that was being said to me, and which I knew, but it was a very happy reminder, then I was actually able to see this plane sort of like looking through a window, but it wasn't solid. It was waves and particles.
Mm,
now,
beautiful.
You can still see the shapes of different things,
yes.
But they were not solid. They were in waves and particles, and it also looked very gray compared to the brilliant, beautiful color that I saw and experienced on the other side.
Ah, there you go.
It was absolutely wonderful. And then also, I was told specifically, remember, you know, right after, this is an illusion that you're getting into here, that you are to just traverse through it, but not become involved or to identify with that plane. You're
yes.
visiting there.
Yes.
And I thought, perfect. You know, It is absolutely perfect. And so I'm always pleased when other people are able to say these very things, because for me, my NDEs validated my experiences as a lifelong mystic, knowing that I was not my body ever.
Yeah.
But then people would tell me, oh, you're living in a fantasy world, you're living in a dream world, you're out of touch with reality. And I thought, excuse me?
This is the unreality.
Oh, is it ever? So it's absolutely the opposite of what most people claim it is.
That's how a lot of the stuff, we bring lots of examples to demonstrate that thing in a practical way, that in fact the truth is upside down. Whatever we thought of as true is not true, does not exist, has no value.
yes, and I'm really, really excited about this book. Now, let's tell the listeners again, it is entitled Take Me to Truth. And your website, correct, is takemetotruth.com.
Yeah.
That's right. And the other thing, Juliet, is we've been, since the book was released in September last year, we've been traveling, doing workshops all around the country.
I was going to ask you about that next.
Yeah.
Now, when you speak around the country, you are talking about America, correct?
We were back in the old country last month. We were in England, and we went to Belgium, and in October we're going to back to Australia for a bunch of workshops, and then we'll be back here in the States again.
Excellent. Well, since this radio show is worldwide, feel free to tell our listeners some of the places that you will be and some dates if you would like.
Sure.
Sure.
Until October, we're right throughout the States, and they can just click on our website, and we have a seminar and workshop page that lists the cities like Portland and Kiel, and where else are we?
Virginia, Portland, Oregon, East Lansing in Michigan, Ann Arbor, and a few other places as well. So they're all up there on the website.
And then we're going to Australia in October, and any of our Aussie listeners will say g'day now, and we'll see you in Sydney, or we'll see you in Brisbane, or possibly South Australia in Adelaide. And then we're back here in February in San Francisco, and on we go. We've already got plans to be back in Belgium. We're adding Holland to the list of dates next year. Canada, I was just up in Toronto earlier in the year. And, you know, the beautiful thing is what we love doing with this is that it's experiential. Our workshops are not talking at people. They're helping people and working with people to facilitate that inner knowing and to come up with examples where they can identify for themselves, hey, I've experienced that. Okay. I've discounted it, but now I see that was true. I need to validate that better. And that's the internal guidance. And we've all had that experience. So it's just about bringing that out and helping them to facilitate that and give them the strength and the courage, because it takes courage, because it is like a death experience. The funny thing, Julie, is that this life is a near-life experience.
Yes, it is. Absolutely.
It's not even living, it's a near-life experience.
And that's why I think that the whole notion of near-death or death experience is really a misnomer, because the fact is that when we leave this body behind, we are more alive than ever. True story. And, you know, through this work, and I think it's wonderful that as you were talking about bringing up these different points, and then some of your attendees will say, oh, yes, I went to that. Well, that's what we're doing, as sharing our near-death or, you know, the death experiences. That's why I've got this radio show, because the more we talk about certain things, it is reminding people that they've had these experiences too, and indeed to validate them.
Yes.
Because again, you know, so many people have said, oh, I think you need psychiatric evaluation if you believe that you're infinite consciousness.
Yeah, right.
You know, oh, goodness me. So.
And I think the other one, Juliet, is also like dreams, lucid dreaming.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
People need to pay attention and give and validate those, because so much guy. Because the funny thing is, the guidance is waiting for us 24/7.
Yes.
It's just that we've turned away. That's all that's happened.
Good point. That is such a good point. Now, would you have any suggestions as to how one might
get in touch?
Well, enable oneself to really flow into lucid dreaming. Do you have any ideas about how one can really prepare oneself or instigate lucid dreams, or being receptive to these experiences?
Yes.
That bring them back into touch with their true selves?
Setting the intent. So
okay,
declaring the intent and saying and affirming that I am safe to allow myself to go deeper. And then I would add, learn to journal. And this is in journal as in my day today began at, you know, and I went to the shopping mall, but rather this is bringing me discomfort, or I lost peace today about this issue. And then handing it over and saying, guidance, come to me. Divine, come to me.
Mm-hmm.
Speak to me. And then journaling that. And then in terms of dreams, at night before we go to sleep, if we can affirm to ourselves, and it's the old fake it till you make it, see, but it's affirming to ourselves who we are, which is that we affirm that we are spirit, and that the divine guidance in all forms is reaching out to us, as well as in our dreams. And affirming that before we go to sleep, getting the pad and paper next to our bed, and allowing ourselves to say, I am safe to receive whatever guidance I need. And it'll happen. It's a guarantee. It could even happen in the daytime driving in a car. The radio gods sometimes speak to us, right?
Don't they? Yes.
Right? In a song. You could hear the song 99 times. The 100th time you hear one sentence in that song, and you break up, and it's like you go into a million pieces. You no longer exist. You become that oneness. You feel it in your body. That's connection right there.
Absolutely, and I've even spoken with people who've gone into these transcendent states whilst driving their motor car.
Exactly.
Well, and I don't drive, of course, so I can't fathom that in that context, but certainly in others, you know, when I'm playing music or what have you, I'll just be awash. It's like I've just suddenly transported into the truth of who I really, really
yes.
am, and it's the most glorious experience.
And you know, the one final tip I'd like to say, whatever people like doing right now, for example, it might be gardening, walking, whatever, carry on doing that. And just before we start, just say, I'm open. Because as you said, those moments can come looking at a flower, listening to a bird, doing a painting. The guidance is always there.
Oh, bless you. That's so perfect. And that's actually what I've said, too. This is wonderful. And we've actually come to the end of this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. It's been absolutely wonderful. We've been speaking with Tomas Vera and Nuke Sanchez, authors of
Take Me to Truth. It's a beautiful, beautiful book that will empower all of you who read it. To find out more about that book, please do go to takemetotruth.com, and also you can find Tomas Vera on towardthelight.org and the book there as well.
Thank you so much.
Juliet Nightingale reminding you that it is only with the heart that one can see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. Next week, we are going to have Stephen Mitchell on Toward the Light, so you'll definitely want to tune in then. And this is another special reminder to one and all. Please remember that only love prevails. We'll speak to you next week on another transmission of Toward the Light. Love and light to all.